WFAE streaming is sponsored by Corporate Information Technologies, a local IT company assisting business and taking a proactive approach to technology. CIT, let us show you how good IT can be. corp-infotech.com.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Most people who have dogs keep them as pets, but there are those dog owners who have a competitive streak. Perhaps they believe their dogs have one as well. Some of those folks and their dogs find their way to the world of dog shows, and their canine becomes a show dog. It's a sport combining competition with a chance to look at very special dogs, a sport enjoyed by both dog owners and spectators alike. Perhaps you've seen these shows on TV and it piqued your curiosity. Well, now we're going to find out more about this world of competitive dogs and their owners. And we have invited Maggie Bultrike to join us. She is a certified professional dog trainer and a member of a number of dog training and breeding associations, including the Association of Pet Dog Trainers, Piedmont Kennel Club, and the North Carolina Federation of Dog Clubs. Welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Good morning. And you've brought a beagle with you.
I have brought a beagle.
Mary.
Mary is the beagle. She is a Finnish champion, but she's still a pet. And Mary is quite talented, as we hope we'll find out this morning.
Mary plays musical instruments, and we're going to hear her in a little while, if she doesn't start beforehand. Also with us is John. She really wants to get going here. She's playing with the microphone down there. And John Schoeneman is a licensed dog show judge for several different breeds and past president of the North Carolina Federation of Dog Clubs. And you have brought a Doberman with you.
Yes, I have. Thank you.
Welcome. Kaiser is the Doberman's name.
Yes, sir. This is a not quite nine-month-old Doberman. He's halfway through his championship right now.
Well, I'm happy to report that both of these dogs, the Little Beagle and the Big Doberman, have been in the studio now for quite a while, and the big one has not eaten the small one yet. And they haven't even barked at each other. How do you explain that?
Socialization, in a word. We get them used to the whole idea of being out among all kinds of people and all kinds of dogs early, as soon as they're old enough to go places.
So how long does that take? Because this is remarkable. Your beagle, Mary, has made some vocalizations, but usually after she plays the piano.
Well, yeah, that's her encore performance. How do we go about that? Well, we start with them when they're puppies. We start with them before they're even weaned, getting them used to as much as possible, because they have to be pretty well bomb-proof when they get out there. It would be really bad for the sport and the perception of the public if your dog barked at a child just because he was startled.
So. Or at the judge. Do you take points off if a dog barks at you? Because you're a judge.
Yeah, well, they normally don't like it if they're going to start showing their teeth at the judge.
The judge doesn't much care for that.
Yes, that's true.
Now, the closest I've come to a dog show is on television. I've seen some of those competitions on TV. I think there's one very big dog show. Is it the Westminster Dog Show?
Yes, the Westminster Dog Show is actually the second oldest sporting event in the country, directly behind the Kentucky Derby.
Mm-hmm. So I've watched that a couple of times when it's been on television, and don't have a clue what's going on. I just watch it because I like to look at the dogs, but don't have a clue about what the judge is seeing. But it kind of reminded me, because they go behind the scenes between that and that movie Best of Show, which is a mockumentary about dog shows. They go behind the scenes and they show pet owners in that film, which reminded me a little bit of the little girl, not the big girl, but the little girl beauty pageants, where the little girls are in it and they have no idea what they're doing, but the moms are all about it. Is that what this is about, too?
The dogs really don't care. They're sort of like, you take them to the dog show and they're all dolled up and looking great, and they say, "You really want me to walk around in a circle again while this guy comes and looks at me closely?" They don't know, but we make it happy for them, because if they're not happy, they don't look very good.
Yeah. Now, what is the purpose of a dog show? Obviously, is it to win? What is the purpose?
Well, there are several different types within the American Kennel Club. I mean, this particular weekend, as we refer, the Thursday through Sunday, there's several clubs that are actually sponsoring or putting on the show, and At this particular show, there's going to be agility trials where you see the dogs that are going through the tunnels and the weave poles and over the A-frames and things of that nature. There's also obedience and rally, where it's a much more formal art of training, sit, stay, retrieve. And then there's the confirmation showing, which is the portion of the American Kennel Clubs where they're basically trying to choose the best dog or the closest dog to the standard of their particular breed. So every dog will compete in a class, whether it's a 6 to 9 puppy class, American bred class, open class, and then all the winners of these classes move on for best winner's dog, winner's bitch. And then they
beg your pardon.
Well, that's the true use of the word.
Until you get to that all-powerful best in show. But
yes,
the real dog shows have been around about 154 years, I think, in the confirmation way we look at them. Originally, dogs were just judged on how well they performed. If my dog herds sheep extremely well and your dog herds sheep extremely well, then perhaps a match between those two would produce really good working dogs. And so the whole purpose of a confirmation show is to evaluate these animals as to whether or not they can do what they were intended to do.
So that's how it started. It was kind of a way to
talk
about
stock,
breed stock.
Evaluating your breeding stock.
And because I guess these are entertaining, they've continued on beyond that, because we don't have a lot of sheepdogs anymore that actually herd sheep,
well,
do we?
Queen Victoria had a lot to do with that. Breeds as we know them today were not quite as clear-cut or well-defined.
Mm-hmm.
But this sort of became the Fed. This was the Victorian era where you had to categorize everything. You collected birds' eggs and stones and the like. So why not dogs?
Right.
And then as that went on, it built upon itself. And each breed has a parent club that defines what that dog is supposed to be. So if you read Kaiser the Doberman's breed standard and Mary the Beagle's breed standard, you will see that it pretty well defines what you see right here before you.
So there is this part that you mentioned, John, of the dog show where they are paraded out and judged on appearance. That's to see how close to the standard of a Doberman, or in your case, the standard of a Beagle, these dogs are. That's the beauty contest of this. That's the beauty contest portion of this, if you can call it that, right?
Yeah, well, that's kind of, we don't like to call them beauty contest, because the judges actually...
They're being judged on appearance, and there's nothing you can do.
Well, they're judging structure, movement. Actually, they are indeed evaluating temperament, too. You know, the Doberman standard says that they're supposed to be loyal and supposed to be confident. So when the judge comes up to them, they're looking to see if they're trying to pull away or they're trying to be over aggressive or, you know, something of that nature. So they're evaluating the entire dog. They also look for structure, muscle tone, height, size.
And when it comes to a dog like a Shih Tzu or a Lhasa Apso or a poodle, is it also how they are groomed? Because these are long-haired dogs. Does it matter?
You don't see the they have to look as they are intended to look per the definition of the breed standard. But John was mentioning temperament. We start that very early too. I do puppy temperament testing. John does temperament testing for the Doberman, which is rather a complicated thing.
How do you test for temperament?
Well, with puppies. When I'm testing a litter, they have to be as near to 7 weeks of age as possible, and it's done one puppy at a time in an environment totally unfamiliar, and I, the evaluator, have never been near these puppies before. The owner, the breeder owner's not present. They just set the puppy down over a baby gate, usually where I am. And then there's several things you evaluate. You know, puppy, come to me. If the puppy comes, you get one. If he goes and hides, you get another idea. If he rushes over and bites your ankle, you get yet another idea. So this is how it goes. But see, and most astute breeders pretty well know if they have any shy puppies or any problem puppies. But you just do it sort of to confirm their opinions. But what John does is totally different with the Doberman temperament test. It involves firing cap pistols, loud ones, doesn't it?
Well, again, it all goes back to the standard of the breed. The Doberman Pinscher Club of America actually created or developed one of the very first temperament tests ever in the country, and it's probably been 30 years. I've been evaluating them for a little over 20 years.
So what is a good temperament for a Doberman? Which does not, you know, in some circles, Dobermans are scary.
Well, they certainly have a look to them that can be intimidating.
Yes.
So, but they're very misunderstood in a lot of ways because a good Doberman probably makes one of the best family dogs there is. Again, being prejudiced since it's my breed.
Second only to the Beagle, like we say.
That's right. Mary's Beagle comes in a second close.
Well, now, in the first part of these contests, you talk about some of the things that they have to do. So, for lack of a better word, I'm sure they're not called tricks, but they're put through their paces. And so when they're put through their paces, is this fun for the dog, if dogs can have fun? Do they enjoy doing this? And do they enjoy training for doing this?
It should always be fun. Everything about it is fun. Now, many, many years ago, some of the old traditional way of training dogs was not fun. It was not done in a positive manner. But in the last 20 years or so, I think most breeders and trainers all do everything in a positive mode. My dogs, when they see me getting ready to load up the motorhome to go to a dog show, they're just beside themselves. They're running and jumping and wanting to be the first one out the door to get to the motorhome to go to the dog show.
Mm-hmm.
And Kaiser's mother, she is was in the top 20 Dobermans in the country for the past 3 years, and every time we got the motorhome out, she was ready to go to the motorhome because she wanted to go to the dog show. And one time I went to the dog show, and it was our dog show, and I was working the dog show, and I left her in the motorhome. Well, she was very upset and very dignified that I left her in the motorhome.
Is that because she wants to compete or because she wants to be around other dogs?
No, she doesn't.
They want to be with us.
Yeah, the Dobermans are really bonded to people, not dogs. So the other dogs are just
there. If you can go, why can't I?
That's right.
Exactly,
you know,
right.
I know where you're going, and I'm supposed to be with you.
Yeah. So.
But you were talking about getting them prepared for this. Confidence. It's all about confidence, and that's why we start young. We take them to classes that geared toward showing dogs, and there are three parts to the presenting a dog to a judge. One is standing for examination. The animal has to remain in position while the judge goes over, is the expression, runs his hands over the dogs. In the case of the Dobes, they have to look at the entire mouth, all the teeth matter. In the case of the Beagles, they just sort of look at the front teeth. That's one thing.
What are they looking at the teeth for? What are they looking
for?
Well,
because a bite, if the teeth are not aligned properly, or if you have a lot of missing teeth, the animal, there's something wrong, isn't there? So, unless it's a very old dog.
It could be cured by orthodontics.
Well,
oh,
but
no.
that would be cheating. But, you know, that's the one. And then the dogs move individually, so there's the movement one at a time, and then there's the movement as a group within the breed, and then later on more. But you start young, and the dogs are very confident. You know, I am here with my person. I know exactly what to do, and there are cookies involved.
So, you know, I'm there if there are cookies involved.
Yeah, it's kind of like I see the judge coming. I will wag my tail because later there's a cookie.
Maggie Bluetrike is a certified professional dog trainer. John Schoeneman is a licensed dog show judge. Prior to next week's Westminster Kennel Club Dog Show, we're listening back to our conversation from last year about these dog shows and the competitors involved. We're going to take a break. We'll come back with more in just a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the Goddard School, celebrating its 25th anniversary with a birthday party open house event at Charlotte area locations tomorrow from 10 a.m. to 12 noon. Details at goddardschool.com. Coming up Monday on Charlotte Talks, are you superstitious? Do you dread Friday the 13th? Avoid walking under ladders and black cats? Do you ever keep your fingers crossed? Well, even if you're not superstitious, do you ever wonder how the superstitions that those things are unlucky came to be? Well, so did we. So we're going to find out. Knock on wood when Charlotte Talks, Monday at 9 on 90.7 WFAE. If you have a food-themed Valentine's story, heartwarming or horrendous, WFAE wants to know about it. You could win one of five gift certificates to an area restaurant. The deadline for entries is February 14th. Details at WFAEats.org.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the Friday News Roundup. The White House agrees to give Congress classified drone documents. The Justice Department sues Standard & Poor's. And the Post Office announces plans to end Saturday delivery.
Join us for 2 hours of the Friday News Roundup on the Diane Rehm Show. It's from 10 to noon this morning, right after Charlotte Talks, on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. With the Westminster Kennel Club Dog Show coming up on Monday and Tuesday of next week, we thought it would be a good time to listen back to our conversation about the world of show dogs. Our guests are Maggie Bluetrike, a certified professional dog trainer and a member of the Piedmont Kennel Club, and John Schildeman, a licensed dog show judge and past president of the North Carolina Federation of Dog Clubs. They brought their dogs with them, Kaiser the Doberman and Mary the Beagle. At the time we did this show last November, they were getting ready for the annual Greater Monroe Kennel Club show, and I asked them about the dogs' behavior at these shows, and in particular, kids at dog shows.
Well, the Dobe and my little Beagle are not what we call high-maintenance dogs in terms of having them prepared, but heaven forbid anyone, boy, regardless of age, run up and ruffle the coat of the poodle that someone has just spent 5 hours on. Or worse yet, the old English sheepdog, you say, how long does it take you to groom? And the guy says, I don't know, I've never finished. So, you know, it's best to just say, may I pet your dog?
Yes, right. These events, as we said, started out as a way to show off dogs to see if they were going to be good for breeding stock in various different categories. But that's kind of fallen by the wayside now. Now they've become actual shows. But along the way, somewhere along the way, rules were developed and formalized and codified so that everybody's on an even playing field. Is that correct? If I go to a dog show this weekend, if I go to this dog show and then went to one in another part of the country, would the rules be the same? Would the judges be looking for the same kinds of things from show to show to show?
Absolutely. It's all governed by the American Kennel Club, and mm-hmm. they normally have an AKC rep, a field rep that is at the show making sure that everything is being done according to their rules. They also have a show superintendent, and their responsibility is to make sure that all judging is done when it's supposed to be on time and in the proper ring.
How do you learn to be a judge? What do you have to go through? Are you kind of like an NFL referee that has to be you have to have training and things like that?
Yes, there's a tremendous amount of training. Most people, when it comes to being like a confirmation judge, you start off with a particular breed and you work your way through a group and then on to multiple groups. They actually say you can get your doctorate, your PhD, cheaper and faster than you can get a group judging position within the American Kennel Club. So it's a very, very long process. Most judges have been in the sport for 20 or 30 years. A lot of them used to be handlers, owners, breeders themselves. So they have been in it a very, very long time, and they have just progressed into becoming a judge.
What kinds of dogs are most often seen in these shows? What breeds?
Well, when John mentioned groups, we have seven groups. I wrote them down so I wouldn't forget anybody. Mm-hmm. It's sporting, hound, working, terrier, toy, non-sporting, herding. Well, most of those speak to themselves. Non-sporting is the catch-all group. That's where you find.
Well, give me some examples of dogs in each of those groups for people who don't know.
Dogs in each of those groups.
Yeah.
Sporting. Here we go, John. John and I have known each other for 20 years, so we can pretty well do this. Those would be the setters, the pointers, the spaniels in sporting.
Labrador retrievers.
The retrievers.
Okay.
Hound, obviously. Beagle. But we also have the Borzoi, used to be called the Irish Wolfhound, and there you're not going to see too much different between a Borzoi and a Beagle, but these are all hounds, all the foxhounds. the bloodhounds, the hounds, scent and sight. So there go, here come the Africans and the Salukis in terms of sight hounds, those who, the gaze hounds, working. Well, we got the dobe to start with. And all, I call them the muscle breeds. They're kind of like the Jaguar and the Corvette, the working breeds, because Rottweilers, dobes help John. And
typically everything in the working group are, as the word says, they're working dogs. They had a purpose to do some sort of work.
Where would a Jack Russell Terrier fall?
Well, that would be in the terrier group.
Because there's a big difference between a Jack Russell and some of the furrier ones, aren't
they? Yes, and actually
in the furrier terriers.
Yes, the furrier terrier.
In American Kennel Club, we don't have Jack Russell Terriers. We have the Parson Terriers, okay. And actually George and I were talking about that earlier. Again, every breed has a parent club, and they have, it's their job to take care of the standard of their breed. Mm-hmm. The difference between a Parson Terrier and a Jack Russell Terrier basically are size. The Jack Russell Terrier is a smaller dog. The Parson Terrier is a little taller dog. Most terriers, as a general rule, somebody left some food on the floor.
the terriers.
That must have been me.
Apparently so. It's over in your area. And Kaiser found it.
Yeah, most of the terriers will go to ground after vermin.
The terrier group is a rodent killer, basically.
Oh,
they're
okay.
Used. That's what their original jobs were.
But then you have things like the Airedale, who can do it all. They carried messages during World War II. They did wonderful things. They guide the blind. I'm kind of partial to Airedale. I think they're lovely. That's the big one.
Are all the dogs who compete in these shows pure breeds, or can you have a mixed breed in there someplace, or does it matter to you?
Well, actually, again, this is the American Kennel Club, which is a organization of purebred dogs.
Okay.
We do have mixed breeds are allowed in the sport of agility, obedience, rally, those type sports. The
canine good citizenship.
All of the confirmation dogs are purebred dogs.
Mm-hmm. What's rally? You've mentioned that a couple of times. What is that?
Wonderful.
Yeah.
That's a good description.
It's kind of the beginning step of obedience. Obedience was a very formal, very structured type training. And they wanted something that was a little more fun, a little less stringent for people. So it was kind of like a stepping stone into the formal obedience portion of AKC.
Getting back to the purebred nature of this, how do you determine the purity of the breed of a dog? Do you have to rely on the lineage, the papers that come with dogs down through time? Is that how you do
it? Pretty much. It's a pedigree that they look at. AKC actually can do DNA testing now to determine the lineage of an animal.
I think dogs were the first genome sequenced, weren't they?
I'm
pretty sure the canine genome was one of the first sequenced.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I was just saying, so they're really up on that. And if you have a problem, you're not quite sure whether it was the dog you intended or the handsome stranger, you can do DNA testing to find out.
With regard to pure breeds, I've heard that they're temperamental, et cetera, and it has to do with genetics. If you keep within the same gene pool over time, there's a degradation there that you run into problems, don't you,
Depends on the size of your starting gene pool.
Well, and again, also, you
talk to your zookeepers. You know, they work with they have to keep bringing in new strains. And if we were breeding tigers, for example, you know, we would have to be bringing in genes from elsewhere, and that's easy enough to do with purebred dogs.
Okay,
and there is a lot of talk about, you know, people use that term that mixed breed dogs are better dogs because they don't have all the health issues that the purebred dogs do, and that's really a very strong incorrect statement. There are no studies that prove that mutts are healthier dogs or mixed breeds are healthier dogs than purebred dogs.
It's the don't take absence of evidence for evidence of absence. There's no category for large brown dog with hip dysplasia.
Yeah, every purebred dog club, parent club, the Doberman in specific, since I have one, we spend, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars in research and study studying our breed and health issues that can be related to them or are related to them, and what we can do to try to correct it and make it better so we can eliminate those health issues. Every breed has some issue with it, and over time and research that the parent clubs have done on their breeds, they have been able to acknowledge that and decide how to best try to correct it. Years ago, people always used to talk about hip dysplasia. Well, I haven't seen a Doberman with a hip dysplasia issue in 30-plus years. And it's because of good breeding. You know, they started breeding away. When you have pedigrees of dogs and you have health records of dogs and health registries of the dogs, then you can breed away from health issues. With mixed breed dogs, it's
you
just what it says.
Get.
It's a mixed breed dog and you have no idea.
And some of those studies for the health of our breeds transfer directly to human-related possibilities. The cardiology things, the ophthalmology things, you know, what they have learned from studying the dogs can be transferred later on into helpful things for people.
Now, Maggie Blutrike, you are a professional dog trainer, and I have so many questions about that because people have so many dogs that run around the neighborhood that everybody should hire you. But how does someone become a professional dog trainer? What do you have to where do you learn
well,
that?
Well, the CPDT certification is the Certification Council for Professional Trainers. Well, first of all, you have to have X number of hours training at Y number of dogs over Z period of years, and then you sit down quietly for a 4-hour written exam. The exams are given in various locations. You can go to the ccpdt.org to find out about
it.
CC, Certification Council for Professional Dog Trainers, CCP. Okay. But I am a CPDT. I don't get an extra C there. but at any rate, that's what one does. And if you're lucky like I was, you grew up with them. You know, I started out working with horses, so when I had a Great Dane, he was kind of small. and so, you know, we just like them. All dogs are wonderful.
How do you train them? I mean, I've done programs in the past with dog behaviorists in trying to help ordinary people who don't care about show dogs. They just want to make sure that their pet doesn't bite the neighbor when they come over for a visit, talking about training. How do you train them? What tactics do you use to help them learn in a constructive way?
Well, you assess what's going on in the home. You find out from the dog's owner what is the most important thing. It might matter a great deal to me that the dog walked nicely on a loose leash, but it's a 3-pound Chihuahua, and Mrs. X doesn't care. Mm-hmm. What she's concerned about is the fact that Fifi barks at every single sound.
Right.
So then that's what you work on. You mean, are you talking about the actual physical process of training?
Well, kind of.
Well, we do what we call lure reward. If I'm holding a cookie an inch above the puppy's nose and I gradually raise my hand, like I'm going to put my hand between his ears, his little nose goes up and the laws of physics will put his little rear end down. Good sit, puppy, have the cookie. So that's a lure reward. It's very simple, very quick, and most people can do that nicely. I'm very much into clicker training, which is marker-based. Namely, I make a noise when the dog does the right thing, and he thinks, oh, that noise produced the cookie. I think I'll do that again.
Ah.
So that's the other way of going about it.
Now, I'm sure that most of the dogs you train, you don't teach musical repertoire to, but evidently Mary, the beagle, your beagle, has picked up some talent, some musical talent here, and we're going to put a video of this. We have put a video of this on our website at wfae.org/charlottetalk, so you can actually see Mary in action. All right, let's try this again.
Let's do our rhythm section, dear.
Yeah. Let's play the rhythm section over here. There, Mary, go ahead, play that.
Music. Nope.
She's not wanting to do this.
Oh, but she did. Yes, she
did.
Over here, did this.
We have to put the instruments in the proper
place.
She has
a preference. My word, she has a preference.
Let's not forget this is a hound dog.
She's a rapping dog. I can tell.
Good girl. Good girl. Well, she's 12. You know, so when we're 12 years old, we're
she's
allowed.
Not. She was more cooperative in rehearsal.
No, I know why, too. It's because she sees all this lovely. Okay, go. Music. Thank you. Good. More music over here. Music. Music. Good girl. Good girl. Over here.
She has a great sense of rhythm. I will give her that. I will give her that. And now she's being rewarded. All right. Okay, that's your showtime is over.
What you saw there is an example of what we call targeting.
Yes.
You just teach them to touch something, and then it doesn't matter what you put there for them to touch. And Kaiser now is very jealous. He wants cookies.
I must say, this goes in line with every time I've ever worked with an animal on radio or television. In rehearsal, they do precisely what you want them to do. And then when you get on the air, they do what they want to do, which is not what you rehearsed. I did a thing at the Renaissance Festival years ago where we rehearsed a hawk flyover where these hawks were released from one side of a football-sized field to fly over my head, over my shoulder, to the other side of the field. And we rehearsed it about five or six times so that the camera could get everything right. And then we did it on the air, and the thing went right for me. And I had to hit the ground on the. It was so you. This follows along the same.
And that
line.
Was radio. That's a shame.
No, that was television.
Okay,
it was television.
Good, good.
And this happens a lot at the dog shows too. You know,
really?
they train and we always say they're beautifully trained at the training courses or the training buildings, and we take them to the dog show, and they do everything except what they're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're like, oh, I'm at a dog show now. Now I can do what I want. Mm-hmm. A little quick story. I had a friend that had a Doberman that was a champion, and she was trying to get its obedience title. And they have to do a sit and down, a long down. And you walk across the other side of the ring, and the dog has to sit there and wait until they're called back. Well, this was a show dog, so he was a confirmation dog, so he liked people. So every time she would sit him and walk across the ring, she'd turn her back on him to walk to the other side. He would go and visit the audience around the ringside. But before she got back over to her spot, he would go back and sit in his spot and pretend that he'd never moved when she turned around.
What?
So it got to where it was hilarious, and people were coming just to watch him do this. So she was very upset because she wasn't able to get that title as quickly as she wanted
to. And we were talking about Rally being a little less formal than structured obedience, the original obedience. A rally is like the race. There are signs. There are stations. And the person enters the ring, and the judge does not speak. The judge just marks the progress. And you might come to your first, they're numbered. You move numbers consecutively. You might come to number one, and it says sit. So you ask your dog to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And you go to number two, and you do what the sign says. That hints rally. That's why it was called rally. And it's a great deal more fun for the dog in person. It's much more relaxed.
If you could teach the dog to
read.
Particularly
they wouldn't need us.
We're coming right back with more of our conversation from last year about dog shows and show dogs. The Westminster Dog Show is coming up Monday and Tuesday next week. Our guests are John Schoeneman, licensed dog show judge, and Maggie Blutrike, certified professional dog trainer. We'll have more with both of them in a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Diamond Springs, offering bottled water, coffee, and filtration services to the home or office. More information about Diamond Springs at diamondspringscarolinas.com. Coming up next at 10 on the Diane Rehm Show, it's the Friday News Roundup. The White House agrees to give Congress classified drone documents. The Justice Department sues Standard & Poor's, and the Post Office announces plans to end Saturday delivery. Join a panel of journalists for analysis of the week's top news stories. That's the Friday News Roundup on the Diane Rehm Show from 10 until noon. WFAE's next public conversation will feature voices in the gun debate. panelists and audience members will discuss recent proposals designed to reduce gun violence, the politics of the gun control debate, and more. This free community forum will be held on Tuesday evening, February 19th, in the Blumenthal's Booth Playhouse. Details, WFAE.org. David Porter of Hendrick Acura, a WFAE underwriter.
Businesses more and more have to keep engaged with your clients and figure out a way to keep them coming back. WFAE seems to have that figured out. We have seen that WFAE has almost a lifetime loyalty among the listeners. We hear that on a regular basis.
For more information, email underwriting@WFAE.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. With the Westminster Dog Show coming up next week, we're looking at dog shows and what it takes to be best in show.
I think she's made up her mind. There's the Shepherd, the Doberman, the Irish Setter, the Dalmatian, the Kerry Blue Terrier, the Wire-Haired Dachshund, and the Pekingese. Okay, Mary, you've had a couple minutes now. Who do you like?
I think you like the Fiefenator.
I'm kind of rooting for the Doberman because she's a breeder, owner, handler. I like that about her. It would be nice to have a breeder, owner, handler win. You know, the breeder, owner, handlers are the heart and soul of this sport. We see a lot of professional handlers at Westminster, but it's the people who run home Friday night, bathe their dog, load their car, and go to dog shows that are the heart and soul of what we do every day. Signed her book, made up her mind. No taking it back. Everybody's continuing to show their dog for the crowd, for the people at home watching us. And here comes Mrs. Vogels.
As a native of Long Island, being here tonight is just a tremendous thrill. And on behalf of the exhibitors, breeders, owners, and dog lovers everywhere, I'd like to thank Westminster Kennel Club for providing this magnificent venue for our sport. With seven wonderful and worthy contenders tonight. I have but one ribbon. Best in show at the 136th Annual Westminster Kennel Club America's Dog Show is the Pekingese.
That's from last year's Westminster Dog Show, where Malachi the Pekingese won the supreme title Best in Show. Back in November, prior to a local dog show, we talked with Maggie Blutrike, certified professional dog trainer, and John Schoeneman, licensed dog show judge, about what it takes to be the best for the dogs and for their handlers. You brought up a second ago the handler, whether it's a junior handler or the adult. Is the person with the dog usually or always the owner of the dog, or is it a trainer that the owner has hired to be part of this exhibition?
Actually, it's probably 60% or so are owner handlers.
Okay.
There are what they call professional handlers that they make a living showing other people's dogs.
And are you judging the handlers as well as the dog?
We'd like to say no, but that's not true. You know, you're judging the presentation of the dog. So the better you present the dog, the more the judge can see the quality of the dog.
Now, a dachshund will go through this in a very different way than a Doberman, and a poodle will go through this very differently perhaps, and certainly look very different from a beagle. So when you're looking at all these different breeds doing the same things and going through the same tests, for lack of a better word, events, how do you grade them? Because they're going to be different.
Again, every judge is judging the dog against its breed standard. Basically, the judge is trying to find, it is his job to find the dog that is closest to the representation of that breed standard, whether it be the beagle, the Doberman, the poodle.
And if the owner is going to present Is it the owner that does the training?
Yeah, well, I love to show from what they call bred by exhibitor, which means the person showing the dog is the breeder of the dog. The dog was born at my house. And I consider that quite an honor to finish a champion from bred by exhibitor. And you get a little gold medallion from the American Kennel Club, which is nice to have. But in terms of looking over all 161 recognized breeds and varieties and saying, what am I seeing?
Yeah.
Well, you would see as quickly as I would see if a dog were lame. You would certainly notice if a dog was vicious or incredibly shy. So some things overall are the same, what you're looking at.
Well, what makes a good show dog? I mean, do you know one when you see one, or do you have to train them to be one, and after some point in the training you realize they have it or they don't have it?
Oh, they tell stories about the dog found on a chain out back with toenails 3 inches long, and once they got him home and cleaned him up, he went and won. You know, the Horatio Alger, you know,
right.
And this happens. It does happen. But I have a feeling that if John came to my house when I had a litter of six-week-old beagles, although he is not judging hounds, he would be able to see which ones are structurally sound and temperamentally correct for the breed, and I would be able to do the same at his house, even though Dobermans are not my specialty, just looking at the little ones. And there's such a thing as attitude. Sometimes a dog with attitude, great pizzazz, can achieve more than the more correct, but more. In fact, I have one at home like that. I have an extremely correct dog, easily finished her championship, won at some hound shows and the like, but she doesn't have the pizzazz of her sister, who is not as correct, but, you know, just shows better.
We recorded this show earlier this week, so we can't take phone calls and we can't take emails because you don't even know what's going on. But we do have somebody in our studio audience here at Spirit Square who'd like to ask a question or make a comment. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. What are the odds or effects of the, I'm not sure if this is happening in the U.S. side, but I read in Europe they actually stop doing cosmetic surgeries on the dogs? So as far as the duck tails and ears, is that any effect on conformation of these breeds in the U.S. side?
Well, so far that hasn't affected the American dog shows. I'm not sure exactly what – there are countries that have stopped doing some of that. I'm not sure what you mean, how it'll affect it. I mean, the structure of the dog is still the structure of the dog. So
you need to define cosmetic for openers. Cosmetic, when we were joking a minute ago about fixing their teeth, that could be said to be cosmetic, but that's a major no-no. You've really changed something that Mother Nature put there. In terms of the docking tails and cropping ears, that all had a purpose way back when. If my Rottweiler is going to pull the milk cart, his tail really would get in the way of the traces and et cetera that helps him pull the milk cart. So they docked the tails. And it's Cocker Spaniel tails were extremely long, so they docked the tails so they didn't have to pick the burrs out when they got the dogs back from the field. So that's not what I call cosmetics. That's tradition.
Mm-hmm. But if they stop doing that, show the dog and will the dog be judged?
But it's
on
not
par
going
with
to affect the dog.
But it looks different.
It looks different, and it depends on what you're looking at. And I bet you a nickel that John, as a judge, could certainly tell whether the Doberman was a good Doberman if it had long ears or cut ears. So
you're having an event. We've talked about some of the things that happen during these dog shows. And on Sunday, if I'm not mistaken, you're having an event focusing on agility, conformation or conformation and obedience?
Oh,
conformation and obedience. Why are those grouped? Why are they grouped together, and what are they? Agility, I think, explains itself.
Well, conformation is how closely does the dog conform to its breed standard.
Okay.
Yeah, actually, every day, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, there will be obedience rally, agility.
Okay.
Thursday, there are specialty breeds having specialty shows that are just a show for their specific breed.
And Saturday night, let's not forget, Saturday night, it's a match where people can bring dogs that are not ready to be shown or the person themselves have never shown a dog, and we have a match which is run exactly like a dog show without any points being given, and it's a wonderful place to practice, you know, if you yourself aren't used to showing or if your dog is a puppy and needs to learn.
So in that case, you need to bring your dog if you want to participate in
the Saturday match. Saturday night.
Bring your dog for that.
Yes, and again,
is there an entry fee for that?
Yes, it is $10 per dog.
Okay.
And actually, there's also going to be a band. The part-time blues band is going to be playing for us Saturday evening.
And barbecue, yes.
A barbecue by the Cabarrus Arena. So, you know, we do try to make this a special event.
Come early, stay late.
I was going to say, you have to come early for the barbecue or the dogs will have eaten it all.
That's true.
On December the 1st, not associated with this show at the Cabarrus Arena this weekend, the Piedmont Kennel Club's having their 22nd anniversary of Meet the Breed's Responsible Dog Ownership Day, which I would think a trainer like you, Maggie, is very much involved.
Oh, we love doing Meet the Breeds. We've got now, I think, some 35 breeds, some of which you've probably, like the Pumi and the Puli and some of those are not all that common. It's an opportunity for, though we were saying, be careful, don't mess with the dogs at the dog show, you'll rough up their coat. Meet the Breeds is all about, please come, pet the dog, see what you think of this dog. Please don't rush out and get a dog. You know, you don't marry the first person you take to the movies. Let's not get the first dog that looks cute. Let's learn all about all these breeds. And we're staging a Toys for Tots collection that day. So we hope everybody will bring toys to donate to the Marine Corps.
Talk to me a bit about this, because we've been talking a lot about dog shows and show dogs, but most dogs are not show dogs, and most dog owners are not going to show their dog. They just have it around the house because they like dogs, and the kids want a dog, and they have a dog in the backyard or a dog in the house. But sometimes these dogs are a problem. It's hard to housebreak them sometimes. It's difficult to stop them from barking at every squirrel that passes through the neighborhood. It's difficult to not have the dog jump up on people when they come into the house. Some tips on how to pick the right dog for your situation.
Well, real quick before you hit that, that's what's really good about the Meet the Breed event.
Exactly.
Because they don't have puppies there. They're just adult dogs. And that's where you have an opportunity to go and meet the breed, talk to people that have the breed, see what types the dogs are. I mean,
and
of course,
we will tell you the good, bad, and indifferent points, because that's the whole idea. No one wants a dog to go into a home and 6 months later come back to the breeder, or worse yet, you know, just be passed around from home to home. That's not a good thing. The question was, what do people look for in a breed? Does the size of the animal fit the size of your home and backyard and the size of the time you have to invest in it? Some breeds require a great deal more time, a great deal more grooming, a great deal more exercise than others.
And if you don't have a lot of time to be with the dog, does that bother the dog?
Yes, in a word. Lovely book by John Bradshaw called Dog Sense, spelled with an S, suggests that if we're going to leave them alone all day, perhaps we should start to selectively breed for a less social animal. And he does this tongue-in-cheek, of course. But it's a point to be considered. And my thing is, persons with very limited time, who have heavy work schedules, great demands, 6 children, whatever, get a cat. Because they are less.
They don't need you.
They do not need us. They have, you know, we are their staff. And it's a matter of, you know, the dogs are incredibly social. They really need us. It's like we're talking about wanting to go to the dog shows with us. So, yeah, there's a time and a place for everything.
We've referred to these dog show and show dogs as they're competitors in a sport. Why is this a sport?
Well, originally, way back when, the first dog shows were field trials. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were to get, you know, my pack of beagles outmaneuvered out and stayed on the trail better than that pack of beagles. And, you know, with the herding breeds we already talked about, they did the job better. It was competitive. It was a sport. Now when we say the sport of dogs or the dog fancy, it's divided into the things John mentioned a minute ago, the confirmation rally, agility, and obedience.
If people are listening and have been curious about these dog shows, and you've piqued their curiosity even more, and perhaps they're thinking to themselves, I'd like to get involved in this. Is this an expensive activity for the dog owner to get involved in either breeding or training or then taking to shows their dogs?
It can be,
but it really depends, you know, how you can go to whatever level you want. You can do local training. Most of all of the clubs, the Piedmont Kennel Club, the Greater Monroe Kennel Club, are all nonprofit organizations, so they're not out to make money. So they do a lot of things for free. They teach, you know, Maggie has her puppy classes that are very, very inexpensive. There are confirmation classes held at the Piedmont Kennel Club. The Charlotte Dog Training Club is an organization doing obedience training, agility, rally.
Yeah.
And even if you don't end up showing your dog, are these good things for the dog to learn and for you as the owner to learn to control the dog and make it obedient and make it a productive member of the family and of the neighborhood?
When someone leaves puppy class, we were there for good manners and socialization. And I always tell them, please don't stop. You know, a mind is a terrible thing to waste, whether it's a canine mind or not. Go on. Do other things with your dog. There are many things people can do. Everybody wants to have a therapy dog these days. Therapy dogs are the ones that visit mm-hmm. hospice and children's hospitals and the like. Many, many things people can do with their dogs, and it would be a great shame to teach Fluffy to sit rather than jump up. That's how we solve that problem, right. By the way. You teach them to sit to greet. So Fluffy knows how to sit, come and call, walk on lead, and lie down when asked. Oh, poor Fluffy. You know, she's got 12, 15, 20 years with some breeds. Let's do more with the dog.
That's Maggie Bluetrike, certified professional dog trainer, and John Schoeneman, licensed dog show judge. They also brought their dogs, Kaiser the Doberman and Mary the Beagle. The Westminster Kennel Club Dog Show airs on TV live Monday and Tuesday night. Details at westminsterkennelclub.org.